true. All of it.
Him being selfless and what he could become, and then he does something selfish again and kind of resets the clock.
The Force is strong in my family.
I think that the hype for Finn was always bigger than the actual payoff.
Do or do not. There is no try.
With Han Solo, he would be one that would think of himself as a hero.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
That Canto Bite sequence is so misunderstood within the Star Wars fandom. It's critical. You cannot have Finn's storyline without that.
We're not done yet.
Well, he was taken capture and cyborgified. Welcome, Star Wars fans. This is Tatooine Sons, your weekly look into all things Star Wars. From the unique perspective of a father sharing his love for the amazing space fantasy saga with his two sons. I am BB Nate, and I am joined first by my brother, Samuel Hutt.
A cheer to Star Wars fans. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're not a Star Wars fan, then you should still get Star Wars Squadrons, and we'll explain why.
Yeah, Star Wars Squadrons looks pretty freaking awesome. It looks amazing. So,
and of course, you can't have Star Wars without bizarre father figures. So on that note, here's my dad's bow tie Jedi guy.
Can you believe we've made it 9 episodes in to this series?
It's almost over.
It's all, well, it's not over.
Well, the first season.
The first season's almost over. I'm excited about today's topic for sure. Finn is a very interesting character, so can't wait to talk about him. Did I say interesting?
Yeah. This is madness.
So we did a Rebels marathon.
I like this guy.
Marathon's probably the right word for it.
Yeah.
How many episodes do you guys think we watched of that?
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
I have no idea. A lot.
A lot.
Like 14?
What?
Well, we started at 10:30.
Yeah, but we started with the Siege of Mandalore.
Well, it was a part of our marathon. So I'm including it, okay?
Okay.
We started at 10:30.
Okay.
Because that was when we decided to start. And then we had lunch at 12:30. And we finished around 1:30.
With lunch. With 1:30 or 2,
actually. And then we started watching it again. And we went till 10:30 at night.
It was awesome. It was definitely interesting to watch it. One thing I noticed with the animation, and I know it was the same way with Clone Wars, you know, the animation got better each season. But when you get to season 4 with the Doom episode, when you get to World Between Worlds and some of that, that animation really was pretty fantastic. Which do you prefer as far as the animation styles for characters?
Mm.
For the actual, you know, Anakin or Ahsoka or...
It's a trap!
The style between characters. Do you prefer Clone Wars or do you guys prefer Rebels?
Well, I mean, we're probably going to say Rebels anyway, just because we like Rebels more than Clone Wars, but I mean, I would say Rebels.
Really? You enjoy that animation style better?
Yes. I mean, after after our first watch through, right as it ended, I was thinking, I prefer that over Clone Wars.
Really?
Just the animation.
That's generally the exact opposite of what most people would say. I kind of was put off transitioning from Siege of Mandalore, Season 7 Clone Wars, to Season 1 Rebels. I felt the animation drop off between the two, and especially when it came to the characters. That's why I asked that question. You know, I just didn't really the characters don't work as well for me with it. But by the end of that season, it's still pretty fantastic. What was it like watching just the entire series of stories again, and then culminating it with the last 5 or 6 episodes with Doom and...
I like this guy.
Jedi Knight is when Nat Kanan dies.
I got a bad feeling about this.
What was that like, guys?
Sad, of course.
But yeah, it was a bit tough to take, but yeah, it was good.
It's a good show.
It was a good way to recap the story, kind of. So
that's cool. So do you... we're going to talk a little bit in a minute on the show about Bad Batch and the possibility of a series with that when we get to hot takes. But Rebels or Clone Wars follow up series?
It's a trap.
Rebels definitely.
That's no question.
Explain what you mean, because you were kind of freaking out a little bit during the rewatch.
It's just Rebels would make more sense. Clone Wars ended. and there's not many places you can go after it, but they left Rebels open-ended and had so many hints into a sequel or a follow-up, and it needs to happen.
All right, you guys ready for the for hot takes?
Oh, please.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. Good news for the Bad Batch might be bad news for the Rebellion.
What?
Even Adam Driver has his own headcanon, and I'm finally getting the chance to fly an X-Wing and a TIE Fighter and U-Wing and all those other really cool ships in VR. That's all up next on Hot Takes.
Are you brainless?
I never ask that question until after I've done it.
All right, guys, so a Bad Batch spinoff series could be in development. This is from Star Wars Underworld.com, but he talks about Noah Outlaw and all that kind of stuff, so we'll just read what they said. Noah Outlaw revealed on Twitter recently that he and Corey Van Dyke from Kessel Run Transmissions have been hearing via their sources that a brand new animated series is in development.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
And will feature the members of the Bad Batch as lead characters. He explains that the spinoff series will be set after the events of the Siege of Mandalore, the series finale of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and is being developed by many former Clone Wars crew members, which may or may not include Dave Filoni himself.
I got a bad
the series
feeling
is,
about
is expected to be released in 2021 and could feature Captain Rex and Ahsoka Tano in limited roles. Samuel the Hutt, since we first learned about the Bad Batch, you've wondered if they have something to do with this whole Scar Squadron group. Explain what you're thinking about all that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of similarities with the Bad Batch and Scar Squadron. The main one is that the Bad Batch is Clone Task Force 99 and Scar Squadron is Stormtrooper Task Force 99.
It's a trap!
There's a pretty big similarity there, and both groups are specialized groups of individuals who are each unique and different and have their own skill sets, but come together as a team. The one thing that is different between them is Scar Squadron has 6 members, and Task Force 99 now has, or excuse me, a Bad Batch has 5 members right now. So they
because
would have
they've
to,
added Echo, right?
Right. Like so they'd guy. Have to add one more for it to be Scar Squadron. But if you look, Scar Squadron, like, there's a sniper, there's a hunter, there's a tech guy, there's a heavy guy. And then I'm not sure where Echo or the new person would be, but they could fit in there. So there's a lot of similarities. I thought, ever since Celebration, that would be the case.
Since you saw the Bad Batch
information right,
in the trailer on that. Mm-hmm. BB Nate, what do you think about this idea of them transitioning the Bad Batch characters and storyline from Clone Wars into sort of the Empire era and that being a story that they're trying to tell?
Well, it would be that the Empire is still using clones.
What?
So that's interesting. I use that word again. But that, I mean, the first place I saw them, the only place I saw them, because I don't really read a lot of Star Wars comics, is the Star Wars Storm of Crate. I think that might have been the first place they appeared as well, because it kind of seemed like an introduction. And it was just really cool to see a stormtrooper holding a lightsaber and
really
working with it.
So one of the is it Scar Squadron?
Mm-hmm.
Or Storm? It's the same thing because right, Bad Batch right. becomes, yeah. Yeah. Or we're thinking that Bad Batch becomes Scar Squadron. Okay, so one of the Scar Squadron has a lightsaber.
Mm.
That's pretty interesting.
He's the leader of the group.
Yeah.
Wow. Where do you think he got the lightsaber?
I got a bad feeling about
this. I think
he
was probably just an actual stormtrooper, not a clone trooper, who just eventually took down some Jedi and took the lightsaber. I think it would make sense that they would have just a regular stormtrooper leading the group. That way the clones don't decide to do their own thing, you know, because they're clones. So you throw in an actual stormtrooper, it'll kind of help keep them in line and stuff.
I think it would be really interesting to see Bad Batch, because we don't know what happens to them after that opening series of episodes from season 7. We don't know what happens with them during the Battle of Coruscant, if they're there. We know they're not at the Siege of Mandalore on that. Wouldn't it be interesting to see Order 66? Maybe that's the opening of the series. See Order 66 from the Bad Batch perspective, and maybe they take out a Jedi. And,
what?
And they're different. They think differently than the other clones. Maybe they take his lightsaber, and that becomes sort of a symbol of this group as they transition. And we also have to remember, they have the inhibitor chips. They don't know about, you know, the craziness behind the scenes, the Sith Jedi stuff that's going on.
This is madness.
And Palpatine being Darth Sidious and all of that. They're part of the Republic that transitions into the Empire. So it would make a lot of sense from my perspective to see a series about how the Bad Batch actually transitions into this Imperial Scar Squadron.
Are we 100% sure that Echo has an inhibitor chip?
It's a trap!
Well, he's a clone, so I would only think that he would.
Well, he was taken captured and cyborgified.
Please!
That's true. Maybe they took that out. Maybe we see that that's a part of the story, too. Maybe Echo is resisting what's going on with Bad Batch and the inhibitor. A lot of people have said that this isn't a really exciting story.
What?
With it. BB Nate, I want to ask you, what do you think? Do you think the Bad Batch is too obscure of a set of characters in a storyline to really carry a whole new series?
Yes. I think that it wouldn't work, but it's Star Wars. I would watch it and most likely enjoy it because the characters were cool and they were interesting. But I just don't think that it would work. A whole series carried by the stormtroopers, clone troopers that maybe turn into stormtroopers. It wouldn't feel right because in the larger grand scheme of things, I don't feel like it has a ton of impact.
Samuel Hutt, do you think that we could, if they were to show this transition, that we could see Scar Squadron working with a Vader occasionally and potentially interacting with some of the Inquisitors? And this is a way for them to bring in some of those characters as well, tell a little bit more of those stories at the beginning of the Imperial era of the Star Wars story.
Yeah, I think it'd be neat to see the Scar Squadron trying to help reorganize the galaxy in a sense, because, you know, transitioning from a Republic to a all-encompassing Empire is not going to be a easy transition. So I think it'd be neat to see them as part of the group that helps that. And yeah, I could definitely see them working with Vader or working with Inquisitors with that. And I'm sure there's a lot of room for some pretty heavy stories. Maybe even they like go to Batu or something.
That'd be cool.
I think they could fit it in. So I think that there's a lot of potential. But I'm not smart enough to figure out what that could be.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
So let's talk about that, because in the article they mentioned that yes, it is a lot of the crew and the cast, or excuse me, the crew members from the Clone Wars that are working on this, but they aren't 100% sure if Dave Filoni is going to be working this. What do you guys think about a potential Clone Wars follow-up series with Bad Batch that doesn't have Dave Filoni helming
it? I got a
bad
feeling about this.
Well, the last time we had an animated series without Dave Filoni helming it was Resistance, and that was a little bit of a letdown. We had higher expectations, and it just didn't really meet them very well. So without Dave Filoni, I just don't think it would work as well, because he knows what he's doing with animation. And of course, the crew of Clone Wars does as well, because that was 7 seasons that they were working on. But it just wouldn't be the same without Dave, because he understands Star Wars.
What do you think, Samuel, that?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with Nate. If Dave isn't a part of it,
this is madness.
I don't think it's going to be as good as it could be. Again, yeah, Resistance is a pretty good example of that. It had a lot of potential, but it wasn't executed the way it could have been. So I think if you're going to have an animated series, especially an animated series dealing with characters that were already set up by Filoni, you need to have Filoni there working on it.
I like this guy.
Filoni, we trust going forward. All right, so Adam Driver actually has his own headcanon.
It's a trap!
About Ben Solo. This is from IndieWire.com. Adam Driver needed a good explanation for why the son of the galaxy's, or two of the galaxy's greatest heroes, would become the ultimate bad guys. And Lev Grossman of Vanity Fair recently revealed some nuggets that didn't quite make it into his The Rise of Skywalker issue that came out last year. Grossman said, I think probably the thing that was missing for me, I wanted to see more about Kylo's childhood. I thought they would go back to show us more about why he turned to the dark side. And Adam Driver had a lot of interesting thoughts about Ben Solo's childhood. He went on to say that both Han Solo and Leia were way too self. This is Adam Driver's thoughts on this. Han Solo and Leia were way too self-absorbed into this idea of themselves as the heroes to really be attentive parents in the way a young and tender Kylo Ren really needed. There wasn't really much of that in the movie, so I just think that we have to assume that his childhood sucked. BB Nate, Adam's headcanon aside, what do you think it was like for Ben Solo to grow up as the son of Han and Leia and the nephew of the great Luke Skywalker?
I mean, what he said is exactly what I've been thinking. It must be, like, difficult, especially, I mean, with Han Solo. He would be one that would think of himself as a hero because that's his character, but Leia and Han, two of the biggest people in the galaxy. Leia's now a senator for the New Republic, and just as we see in Bloodlines, just had it outed that her father was Darth Vader.
What?
And so everybody doesn't like her, and Han's off racing, and their marriage is falling apart, and
this is madness.
Kylo Ren's over training and not knowing anything about this, and it's just, it kind of feels weird, like he didn't really have a steady foundation in his childhood.
Yeah, so what do you think those expectations and pressures would have felt like for a Ben Solo?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, he's got a lot to live up to. You know, both your parents are war heroes. Your mother is influential member of the New Republic, and your uncle saved the galaxy. good luck with that. You know, I mean, I imagine that would be tough. And then his parents not even like really helping him through that, you know, just basically sending him off to Luke, just like, yeah, you deal with this kid. We're going to go do what we need to do. It was almost kind of like boarding school or something. You
right.
know, they don't want to deal with the problem, so they just send him off.
I got a bad feeling about
and
this.
I imagine that's kind of, I mean, I doubt that's enough to turn Ben to the dark side. But it's enough to kind of start seeding those, like, that doubt or whatever, to where he's put on the path for the dark side, you know, not being nurtured the way he needs to, all these expectations, and then them not dealing with it. I feel like that's kind of like why it was easier for Palpatine to take control of him.
Yeah, and then throw into it the mix that suddenly, as a teenager or sometime in that period, you find out that your grandfather was Hitler.
What?
I mean, that's kind of the scenario that plays out in Star Wars. He's you know, finds out that everything he thought he knew about who his family was, you know, his grandfather was this great Jedi, Anakin Skywalker.
I like this
guy. And
then
he finds out, wait, he may not just have been the great Jedi Anakin Skywalker, who was actually the worst bad guy that exists. And then he starts hearing his voice in his head.
Boy, please.
And all of this. You're right. It does sort of play into Palpatine's grand scheme that apparently was playing out as we see in the opening scenes of the Rise of Skywalker.
And then on top of that, your uncle tries to kill you while you're sleeping.
This is madness.
Yeah, that might set you over
a little bit.
Well, let's keep going. Let's think about the crazy idea here, Samuel Ahud. What would you think about the idea of a Disney Plus series with Sebastian Stan, who plays Winter Soldier in mm-hmm. the MCU, who looks a lot like a young Mark Hamill, and it's been talked about for years, playing that character, playing Luke Skywalker, while he trains a young Ben Solo, played by somebody like Finn Wolfhard, who's Mike from Stranger Things, and that meme has gone around for a few years. What would you think about a series like that?
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
You know, I'm not a huge, well, I'm cautious about it. I don't think Finn Wolfhard would be a great Ben Solo. While, yeah, he has the look, I don't think he could actually pull off that kind of character. Maybe that's just because I've only seen him playing in a Stranger Things role. But from what I have seen, I don't think he could quite fit that role. Sebastian Stan, though, as a young Luke, I think it could work.
I like this guy.
I think it'd take a little while for me to get the Winter Soldier image out of my head and transfer it to a Luke. But I think in general, it's actually a pretty dangerous idea.
It's a trap!
Because you're not only recasting two beloved characters, but you're recasting them at the same time and hoping fans like it, which is dangerous, especially with Luke, because, you know, we've seen how changing Luke's character, even just a little bit, can send some fans over the edge,
what?
Like in The Last Jedi. So recasting him, you know, people are obviously going to have their opinions. I don't like this. It should be this guy, or this guy's perfect and there's no one else.
This is the way.
You
this
know,
is the
way. This it is could the way. Be very dangerous. So I think it's if they execute it the right way and they have the right story, it could work, but they've got to be really careful with it.
Oh, come on. Star Wars fans are known for being really, you know, forgiving and easy to deal with.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Oh, really?
I think that they would get into it. What do you think about this, BB Nate?
Well, it would be fun, and it would be an interesting series that Kylo Ren and Luke training, which I would like to see, but like Sam said, it would be hard to get the image of Luke Skywalker instead of Bucky with Sebastian Stan, and he's has his plate full with the MCU. He's already filming Falcon and Winter Soldier, and then we don't know what else is going on with the movie, so he has that going on, and then adding a Star Wars show on top of it, and that fandom that comes along with it would probably be pretty difficult. And then Finn Wolfhard, I couldn't really see him as Kylo Ren, and I mean, exactly what Sam said, casting two people that everybody knows won't really go well, because that's why I don't like fan casting, because if they do that, then they'll just see these characters when they get in. So just let Star Wars do what they need to do. They know what they're doing. So
wouldn't it be kind of cool, though, to see Luke training Ben, but also working and interacting with Laura Santeca while they're out searching for Jedi artifacts, which then leads to a story where maybe Donald Glover comes in for a series of episodes as Lando, and they're off searching for Ochia Vestoon, and we start seeing some of the backstory to what we learned in The Rise of Skywalker, and maybe we see the story of Lando's daughter. And I mean, I think it would be fun to sort of fill in the gaps in the sequel trilogy.
Yeah,
with
there's
it.
A lot of room there that we haven't quite explored yet. That whole era between 6 and 7, there's still a lot of room in there, because it's like, what, 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
And we've really only done The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And a couple Kylo Ren comics. So
The Mandalorian series is really taking place in a completely different set of stories.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Right.
Right,
so
now, at least.
Yeah, so there's still lots of story that we could explore.
And then it comes in with a teenage version of Baby Yoda to close things out, and as Luke's building his Jedi training academy.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
And Kylo
I don't think
kills.
He'd even be teenage at this point. It's more like still toddler.
Well, I'm talking about like maybe he's aged a little bit more than he is.
And then Kylo Ren kills him.
What?
Ooh.
What's wrong with you?
Well, if we just start talking about how this goes.
Yeah, that's a good one. This one's not going to be on video. Okay, that part of it. Star Wars Squadrons might actually reinvent the flight simulation genre again. This is from Polygon.com. Electronic Arts is making a very bold promise to its most critical fans. Promotional materials call Star Wars Squadrons the definitive Star Wars space combat experience. And that's a powerful claim to make in 2020. It's been several generations since the classic Star Wars X-Wing and Star Wars TIE Fighter broke onto the scene, and the shadow of these games still looms large over the entire flight simulation genre as examples of what the gold standard should be. Pile on slightly more modern classics like Star Wars Rogue Squadron and even current generation titles like Elite Dangerous and Star Citizen, and suddenly the space combat genre becomes a very competitive place. So Samuel LeHut, what do we know about Squadrons, and why should fans be excited about it?
Well, from a gameplay standpoint, strictly, it's going to be fairly basic. It is, you're going to fly and you're going to shoot, but there's still a lot more in-depth stuff in there. So you're going to have, you're going to be able to, well, there's four classes. You've got your fighter, your interceptor, your bomber, and your support. But even deeper in those classes, you can customize them to be even more specialized. So you can have your interceptor class, which is usually the fast and heavy hitting, but you can make it to where you're super low on shields and stuff, but you're crazy fast and crazy high power.
Interesting.
So you can really fine tune your loadouts. And then there's going to be a lot of strategy with things. So you're going to, between each game, you're going to be able to talk with your squadron, like around, like in a boardroom, kind of.
Like a briefing room.
Yeah, like a briefing room around a holo table and stuff, and customize your, or find, coordinate, excuse me, your loadouts and things. So you can be like, okay, you'll use the support class in this format, and I'll use this class. So that way you can really like strategize on how to win. And then in the ships themselves, you're going to be able to, instead of just flying and shooting, you're able to divert power to different things throughout ship. So if you need less for your shields and more to your engines or more to your weapons, you can do that. So it's kind of sacrificing one thing but boosting another. So there's a lot of strategy in this. It's not just fly and shoot, which I really appreciate. And then tack on VR on top of that, and it's just peak.
So it just seems like it's a personal version of Star Trek Bridge Crew.
What?
It could be thought of that way.
I mean, you think you're your own captain, you're your own helm, you're
still
own
a team
engineer, and you're your own weapons. I mean, it's just you have to divert power, and that's the main thing that really.
But then you are still working on a team setting,
right?
Because everybody's got their own fighter that they're using. Now there's a campaign mode to this as well. What do we know about the campaign mode now?
We don't know much about the story itself. We know you're going to be switching between one person on each side that connect their stories.
So you're going Rebellion or New Republic?
New Republic.
It's New Republic because it's set. The campaign is set after.
It seems like just after Endor.
So Alphabet Squadron, Shadow Squadron. Squadron.
Because Hera's still there and everything. So it seems like that era. And so the campaign is going to be short. They're more focusing on multiplayer, but it's going to be around 5 to 6 hours. Is the main
almost like a training scenario where like you get to go and you get to play both sides of the story, but also learn how to use the ships and fly.
Yeah, it's like an extended tutorial kind of.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, and so we don't know much else about the story. At least I haven't heard much about it. And I know that there's going to be 6 locations. Most of them we haven't heard of or ever seen in Star Wars before. One of them is Yavin Prime, which I found to be pretty cool. So
I don't know. Have we ever been to Yavin Prime?
It's just 4. A gas giant. So no one's ever really been there because there's really been nowhere to land. So we're just going to kind of fly around the outside of it.
That'd be kind of cool if we can go down onto Yavin 4 and see some of the ruins and land down there and stuff.
Anyway. I don't know if the maps are that big, but
that'd be pretty cool. BB Nate, we've never really gotten into flight simulators.
No.
Is there a reason to get into this other than it being in Star Wars?
It's a trap.
Well, that's reason enough for me, but it's going to be in VR, which is really important because there's not very many flight simulator games in PSVR alone. And I mean, space flight simulator games. There's only one other. And it never really got big, so people just let it die off. But it's just, I mean, VR and the price is a great selling point as well. It's low enough instead of $60 for a normal priced game, it's only $40, which...
And there's no loot box, no pay to play at all.
No. Okay. No microtransactions is what they made. Like, they were in the gameplay trailer and said you can unlock everything by just playing the game. So,
well, there's a flip side to that, though, because it says you can unlock everything by playing the game. That doesn't mean, though, that you can pay to unlock those things earlier.
Mm.
So,
well, still, you could...
You could still play and unlock them, but it doesn't mean that you can't pay to... get it early, which
but don't
still
you think that would come back and bite them
think
in the butt?
So.
I got a bad feeling about this.
But I'm still a little cautious about it. I mean, we're still going to get the game anyway.
It's a low-priced game, though, so they've got to make money somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they might be selling cosmetics, so that's the main...
I have no problem with them selling cosmetics in any way.
Yeah, just do that. That's fine. That gets you good money and everything like that. That
look works. At Fortnite.
Yeah. So is this going to be a top level flight simulation game that happens to be in the Star Wars storyline, or is this going to be a really fun Star Wars game that happens to be a flight simulator?
Well, EA has always been good with flying. They mastered it in Battlefield 1 is what I heard. People love the dogfighting because it was just realistic to World War II era. And so I think that if they're putting that into a first-person flying dogfighting game exclusively, I think it'll work just fine, and I'm sure that they'll be able to work it out. And even if it's not the greatest of things, I think it's just still going to be a fun Star Wars flying game.
Yeah, I think there's enough to it to where it's going to be more of a... it's going to be a flight simulator game in sci-fi, in a way. Not even including like the whole Star Wars concept.
Space flight simulation too.
Right. So. Okay. So it is going to be a good space flight simulator game. But then tacking on the whole idea of Star Wars is only going to increase its selling point, I think. When you put on the name of Star Wars like this into a game, it can kind of turn off a few game players. The casual fans, you know, they're going to look at it and be like, oh, I don't know Star Wars very well. Why would I play this? Unlike a game like, I think it was EV Valkyrie was the other VR flight simulator game. Anyone can pick that up. You know, you don't have to be a fan of anything because it's its own thing. But you tack on the name Star Wars and it kind of, it's going to appeal to a certain crowd of people like you who don't really play games very often, but like Star Wars. But then it's going to kind of turn off some of the casual fans. And then again, there are some people who play every game that comes out ever and they'll probably get it anyway. But I think you got to be careful, though, when you put the Star Wars name on games because it can change the demographic.
Call up a Hammerhead Corvette. I have an idea.
Be careful not to choke on your aspirations.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
All right, so we got some review. We got a review this week. At least that's what we're getting notified about. So maybe there was others, but this one's the one that came into my inbox. It's from our buddy over there on Twitter. We interact a lot with Cam Ray. He's got his handle as Cam Ray Music, and he also does some Star Wars podcasts.
I like this guy.
Very cool guy. Star Wars Excellence, 5 stars. These gentlemen are knowledgeable, positive, family-friendly, and entertaining.
Boy, please.
Not quite sure what podcast he's listening to. This is one Star Wars podcast you should have on your weekly lineup. The Force is with the Tatooine Sons podcast. Thank you so much, Cam.
Thank you. Seems awesome. Like we're like a Swiss Army knife podcast, you know, like you got everything right there.
That's right. It's like, I think, yeah, like a Taco Bell burrito. It's all just jammed in.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You guys don't eat Taco Bell burritos. No. So you don't know what that's like. So, all right. Then we had a little podcast flash poll. We wanted to get you guys' opinion on Twitter about which sequel trilogy film has the best version of Finn. And this is Finn, like FN2187 Finn, not Finn Wolfhard from... Yeah.
Oh, thank you for clearing
that. I just
want
to make sure we clarified that. We had The Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker, probably because those are the 3 films that Finn was in.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Oh, really?
That's the way that works.
I'm glad you're clearing these up for me.
I didn't put other comment below because I didn't think that that made sense.
This is madness.
Yeah. I'm glad you're making this real simple for us. I appreciate
that. Sometimes we need the help. I was surprised by these percentages.
Yeah, same.
With it. Last place was The Last Jedi. I'm not surprised by. That was widely considered a miss when it came to the character of Finn by most Star Wars fans, even though I think that we're going to argue in a little bit that that was actually a pretty important sequence for him. But, and then the next one though, I was really surprised by Rise of Skywalker came in second with 27.9%. What do you guys think about that?
I really thought that was going to be the highest one.
Why? What do you think about the character in the Rise of Skywalker that would propel it to the
top? Well, I think he's really come to fruition at that point, or I'm not sure if that's the right word, but you know, he's come into his own. He's his own character. He's confident. He's who he is supposed to be. So I would figure people would appreciate that more than his beginning or whatever.
Yeah. What about you, BB Nate? Which would you have picked?
Probably Rise of Skywalker, just because that's where his arc ended and it was a satisfying ending to his character and I liked it, but apparently.
Yeah. It got 27.9% and then the runaway winner, like more than twice or more than, yeah, twice of any of the other ones on there. 51.2%, The Force Awakens. Why do you think that Force Awakens gets to be first place? Why do you think fans seem to gravitate towards the Finn in that series?
Well, I think part of it is probably movie preference too. Maybe, you know, some people didn't like The Rise of Skywalker in general, so they picked The Force Awakens. So I think that reflects somewhat on this. But as for the character, he had a lot more screen time in The Force Awakens than he did in Rise of Skywalker. He was a bit more of a main character, though, in The Force Awakens.
He moved the story forward consistently.
Right. In The Force Awakens. He was kind of there in The Rise of Skywalker. So I think that could be part of it.
Cool. But BB Nate, why do you think Force Awakens won?
Well, it's just because I enjoyed his character in that movie. It was just, he was really good in that movie, but I'm going to save it for the main topic.
This is the way.
Okay.
This is the way.
This is the way.
And then you guys had some comments on there, so.
Yeah, this first one is from Dan Grievous, at Dan Grievous. They commented, Finn was the best part of episode 7, but he was wasted in the sequels.
Droid, please.
So, like, he didn't like the overall storyline that carried itself through in the sequels, but enjoyed the... So he was one of the Force Awakens people. Mm-hmm. Then we had one more.
This is from Adam Goswick at the Goz 85.
Nice. Okay. The Z.
Goz. But not like the medical gauze, G-O-Z, not G-A-U-Z.
I think it's G-A, yeah.
Ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
It's got to be.
I vote T-Ross because this is when he's just Finn. He's done struggling with who he is and where he needs to be, and he just wants to get stuff done.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, now the first image of the sequel trilogy that we had was that of a stormtrooper on a desert planet gripped in fear. And anticipation of what Finn would become was intense throughout the trilogy. What lessons can we learn from an ex-stormtrooper turned resistance general?
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Rebellions are built on hope.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Okay, so as we normally do, initial thoughts on the character before we get into our main conversation about him. Initial thoughts on Finn.
Yeah, I like this guy.
I still remember the trailer and the questions about this stormtrooper. You know, when he pops up and stuff, and like that's the first thing you see of Star Wars coming back, you know? Obviously this character has got to be a big deal. So I still remember that. I still remember all like the hype and the questions and, you know, then him igniting a lightsaber later and it being called The Force Awakens certainly didn't help. But then
it's a trap!
All our thoughts were completely wrong throughout the whole series. So, that was fun, but he is a really neat character. And I like the idea. We haven't really been able to see anything like him or his story before. You know, with Rey, we've seen like that journey through the Force thing with Anakin and Luke, but we've never seen the journey from a stormtrooper to a hero. You know, that's something completely new in Star Wars. So that's why he's an interesting character.
Yeah. Did you guys realize he's the only stormtrooper we've ever seen take their helmet off?
What?
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
Yeah. I just did a quick scrub.
Because you're going through like, well, no, Luke and Han, but they're not stormtroopers.
Well, right.
So and then you go through and Kanan and Ezra, but they're not stormtroopers.
Well.
Very interesting. What did you think? What are your thoughts on Mr. Finn?
Well.
FN2187.
Yeah, I remember all the hype around Finn. I remember we were staying at our grandparents' house, and my grandpa always watches Good Morning America every morning, and so that was on, and then they were showing the Lego trailer. Somebody did a Lego version.
Oh, that's right.
I saw Finn, and I'm like,
I like this guy.
Who is this guy? And why is he so important that everybody is focusing on him? I had no idea, and I was, of course, how young was I?
Anyway, yeah.
But it was just a long time ago, so I was naive and didn't know what I was talking about. But
not like you aren't still.
No.
But that's okay. But
perfectly mature.
Yes. Yeah. But it's just, I was remembering all this stuff around Finn, and then it was just thrown out the window. And Force Awakens wasn't what we thought with Finn. And then Last Jedi turned that around again, and then Rise of Skywalker did the same thing. So Finn's a very weird character in everything that they talked about him with. So it's just strange.
Could it be that the high point of the Finn storyline and arc was the period between the initial teaser trailer and the release of Force Awakens?
Because
that's when I'm not trying to say I don't like the character. I loved him in the Rise of Skywalker, and that's why I chose that as my film we're going to talk about on mine. But honestly, You were talking about it, right? He takes off that helmet and you're like, oh my gosh, that's a stormtrooper taking off its helmet. Who is this guy? He looks terrified. There's an awakening. Have you felt it?
I got a bad feeling
stuff
about
you're
this.
Seeing him there. He ignites the blue lightsaber, the legacy lightsaber in the end of the trailer, in the woods, in the snow, where we've seen Kylo Ren with his red one. You're kind of thinking he's the hero. He's the star. He's the Jedi. Who's this Rey character? She looks cool, but she's on a creamsicle speeder.
What?
And then you go back and you really are focused in on Finn
yeah.
in that trailer. And in most of the hype for The Force Awakens, and I think that was intentional. JJ was trying to
misdirect.
And
I don't even remember seeing Rey really in the trailer. I mean, I remember seeing something speeding along, but I don't think we ever really saw
they
Rey
zoom in on her in a little bit. But okay. No, I think that the hype for Finn was always bigger than the actual payoff with Finn. He was big, and yes, it was a twist in the Force Awakens, but then it just always seemed to kind of never complete the story the way that people really wanted him to. Is John Boyega right to have kind of indicated on social media over the past couple of months that he was slightly disappointed in the character of Finn?
I think it's reasonable. I think the character had more potential than was used. I've said this before with The Rise of Skywalker. I always thought that it had more potential and more things that could be done with it that never actually got done. And I think the same goes for Finn's character.
All right, so let's talk about this transition. This is really the big thing that we can learn from him, is this growth. All right. So we've already said it. The first thing we see of Finn is Stormtrooper. And that's in The Force Awakens. So BB Nate kind of walk through that storyline of his growth and his change in The Force Awakens.
Well, we see in The Force Awakens that it's just all about himself in that movie. It's just all about himself, and that changes, of course, for the rest of the movies. But in The Force Awakens itself, the first thing we see of him is, I mean, he does right. He doesn't want to shoot the civilians, so he lowers his weapon and doesn't shoot them.
So we see what he can become.
Yes.
Okay.
And then we see that he is like trying to help out Poe, but Poe just knows that it's just Finn wanting a pilot to get off of this place. So that's the first thing we see of him kind of just in it for himself. And then there are a lot of other points of that in The Force Awakens, like him, he's like, okay, Rey's safe, she's at the castle, let's go, and I'm gonna get away from the First Order. And then he goes to help and get through the Starkiller base, but he's just there for Rey. So there's a lot of instances that he's just there for himself, and he's changes right at the end. He starts to get better, he sacrifices himself, but I mean,
yeah, he has moments throughout the film where you can see what him being selfless and what he could become, and then he does something selfish again and kind of resets the clock.
Yeah, and it's just, he's, in The Force Awakens, he's a selfish character. That's how you can describe him. And not saying that I don't like him, I like the character of Finn in Force Awakens. It helps with his character arc in the beginning, but that's how you can describe him in the first movie.
Interesting. So then it transitions. You kind of indicate that he ends The Force Awakens with a selfless act.
Yeah.
But then we have that moment in The Last Jedi where things aren't as what they seem.
So. Yeah, he resets the clock again because he's, you know, he gets down to the maintenance bay or whatever, and he's trying to leave on that escape pod or whatever. And Rose is like, oh, you're the hero, you know, you're this great guy. He's like, yes, I am, and stuff, you know. And then she realizes that he's not quite what he says he is. He's doing another selfish act. I mean, yeah, he says it's to save Rey or whatever and let her know. I don't think that's entirely what he was thinking there.
You think that's a justification in a lot of cases?
I think it's more of a justification.
What about the fact, though, that he was willing to go back with the resistance and then go to Starkiller base and help them in order to save Rey? Do you think that it's sort of a both and type scenario as far as that goes?
I think I don't know, it's tough to say. I think there's a partially selfish thought process with it. I think he wants to be safe, but I think he also has the moments where he does have a truly selfless act. I think the whole escape pod scene, though, at the beginning of The Last Jedi, was that that whole excuse was more of just a justification for it. But I mean, throughout the film, you see him grow. He does grow. He grows more confident and more willing to serve the resistance, but it's still kind of selfish and pretty arrogant at times. The, you know, a good example of this is when he's going to hit the battering ram cannon and Rose saves him. And it was a act to save the resistance and stuff, but it really wasn't going to benefit them in any way. It was just this is going to make me look like the hero thing. And it was arrogant and not helpful. So it's kind of still a selfish act. While, yes, he is trying to help the resistance, he's not doing it in the best way he can.
I would disagree. I would say I don't think that he's doing it to become the hero. I think he's doing it from a place of, you know, trying to take out the battering ram, the cannon, whatever it is.
So you don't think it's about guilt?
I think he's at a point where he feels like he needs to do more. I think he's experienced so much. That Canto Bight sequence is so misunderstood within the Star Wars fandom. It's critical. You cannot have Finn's storyline without that, going from Force Awakens to Rise of Skywalker. The Canto Bight sequence is critical because it's where he sees the injustice outside of the world. His family up to this point has been numbers, stormtroopers. He hasn't had any experience. Now he's trying to find a connection. He's found it with Rey, and he is trying to connect with her. He's finding that connection with Rose. He's seeing the injustice in the galaxy. And then you have the DJ element. DJ is critical for being able to for Finn's story, because it's what Finn could become.
You know, someone who's just in it for himself.
Exactly. We start, our first glimpse of Finn is someone who, in his core, is good. In his core, wants to do the right thing, even if that could cause him problems, right? And then he struggles and he falls back. And now he's trying to figure out where he fits in all of this, kind of like, I think, the same parallel story with Rey. She's trying to figure out where she fits in this whole story. She says he's trying to figure out where he fits in all of this. And he's realized, I'm going to throw my lot in with the resistance. This is my new family. I want to be a part of the good guys, not the bad guys. And so it's an immature response to that, but I think it comes from a pure place. What do you guys
think? Yeah, I think that that's a good way of putting it.
Then we move to the Rise of Skywalker. Okay, so we forget sometimes, I think, when we put these movies together, that Force Awakens and Last Jedi happen at the exact same time. They're continuation of the exact same story. They pick up right after each other. Okay, the Rise of Skywalker takes place about a year later, and I think one of the key elements to helping understand Finn and where his story goes in this is Leia's response to this ex-stormtrooper that is now claiming to want to be part of the resistance and to do the right thing. And he's proven himself. He's proven himself with Poe. He's proven himself with Rey. And they believe in him. And I think that their belief transfers to Leia, along with Leia's wisdom and Leia's understanding that her own father was Hitler. Was Darth Vader. We talked about that in a previous segment. Yeah. So, you know, you've got all of that playing together. And I think that her confidence in him helps give him space to grow and to mature and to understand how he does fit into this new family, this new relationship that he's in with these real people, not these numbers, like stormtrooper numbers and things like that.
Yeah.
We also know from The Rise of Skywalker, he's kind of still trying to figure out something new that's happening within him. There is an awakening within him. Going back to the trailer, going back to the original version of our thoughts on Finn, there is the Force within him. He is Force sensitive. He just doesn't know how to express it. He's afraid to even tell anybody about it. That's a plot line throughout Rise of Skywalker. He's struggling with all of that. So we have this character who is is still trying to grow and become what he's supposed to be, or what he feels like he can be and should be, with it. And in the midst of all of that, you have this conflict between the two people that he's closest to.
Okay.
Right. So his first person that he builds a relationship with is Poe. Mm-hmm. Right. Second person he builds a relationship in this story is Rey. Correct. Mm-hmm. And they're at odds.
Yeah.
Especially the first, half of this movie, where Poe is wanting Rey to be a part of this resistance and help out with these battles. And Rey is trying to figure out how to do this force thing and to become the Jedi that she feels like she's supposed to be. And Finn seems stuck in the middle because he relates with both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah.
Because he understands what Rey's going through with the force thing, but he also understands, because he's with Finn or with Poe the whole time in these battles, and they could use the greatest pilot in the resistance at this point, mm-hmm. Some people would consider with it. So he's constantly trying to do this. But what we get to at the end of this is a mature version of his response. We get to the Star Destroyer on Exegol, and he has this moment of sacrifice again where he's willing to give up everything once again for the resistance. But the difference between this time and the end of The Last Jedi is in The Last Jedi, it was foolhardily. Mm-hmm. Right, there was nothing really to it. There was no benefit, like you said, Samuel. In this one, he can actually truly make a difference, and I think he understands that and he experiences that, and it's a different perspective. What are your thoughts on the end of his story when it comes to the Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, I mean, I think I forget who wrote the comment, but on our poll, someone wrote a comment and said that he. In The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, Adam Goswick.
Goswick. Said that he really came into his own and became his own person in The Rise of Skywalker. And I think that that's just the best way you could put it, is he is confident and he finally found who he is as a person. He's not a stormtrooper and a number. He is a person, and now he knows who that is.
What did you think about The Rise of Skywalker ending as far as Finn's story goes?
I loved it because, like you said, the sacrifice wasn't like, okay, I'm just going to do it, even though there's no benefit, because it wouldn't have stopped it. He probably wouldn't have even made it before it launched. And in this one, and he's fully accepting if he is going to get rescued, then he's going to take it, because he doesn't like hesitate to get on the Falcon right as it gets there. He's like, okay, well, I saved the resistance and I was going to sacrifice myself, but somebody came and saved me, so I'm just going to do it. And unlike The Last Jedi, where he's like, hey, don't save me, no, it's okay, and takes off his headset. So I liked the ending of Finn in
Rise of Skywalker,
and I think it fit really well. And
I still am disappointed, though, that they decided to kind of veer off course in The Rise of Skywalker with the Force thing, which, I mean, I know that that's what John Boyega wanted. I mean, he interacted with that tweet that we put out where we had that episode on that, where he indicated he wanted to, mm-hmm. You could tell, oh, wait, there's something there to this Force thing for him. But I wanted to see him be the nameless number stormtrooper that resists that programming and then comes to the conclusion of leading a stormtrooper rebellion. I really did want to see the Sith troopers being sort of the loyal to the Emperor troopers, and the other stormtroopers, the standard stormtroopers, being the ones that are rising up in rebellion. And who better to lead them and to inspire them and to motivate them than FN-2187?
Yeah.
With that, I would have loved to see the ending of that. So, for the dad moment this week, our first glimpse of FN-2187. Is a moment when his true character is revealed. As the innocent on Jakku are being slaughtered by the First Order, a child ripped from his family and raised to kill puts down his weapon and chooses the light side. But the journey beyond that is anything but a straight line, like we've talked about. Life is kind of like that. Sometimes it is two steps forward and one step back. We have to be patient with others. We have to be patient with ourselves. And the idea isn't that we immediately become the best version of ourselves. It's that we are actually moving towards that best version of ourselves every day. So, speaking of characters who take two steps forward, one step back, or maybe one step forward, two steps back. Next week, let's talk about Anakin Skywalker.
There we go.
And close out the series with the ultimate chosen one.
I got a bad feeling about it, this.
We'll explain next week. All right, so anything else you guys want to talk about?
Anything else?
Yeah, so Star Wars Dark Legends is coming, and it's going to be a follow-up to the Myths and Fables book.
Explain.
I haven't read Myths and Fables yet, but I'm really excited to. I mean, it is what the title says. It's myths and fables and legends from the Star Wars universe, so like kind of like what stories people would tell within Star Wars. So Dark Legends is going to kind of be a follow-up to that. And I've looked at some of the pictures and stuff, and the illustrations, and it kind of reminds me of, like, if Lord of the Rings was in Star Wars.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm really excited
for it. So you remember Legends of Luke Skywalker?
Yeah.
It's just those, like, stories of people telling stuff that they've heard over the years, myths and everything like
that's
that.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Ewan McGregor is excited about filming in the volume for the Kenobi series.
I don't blame him.
I know.
I want to go to the volume.
Can you imagine how different that's going to be playing this character Kenobi that he played around a bunch of green screens and blue screens for several years, and now he's actually going to be, and that's one of the things he talks a lot about, is he's excited about interacting with the other actors in an environment where everybody is seeing the same things. It's not headcanon or imagination of what George told them, this is what's going to be up here on the screen, but they're actually seeing it.
Yeah.
And that's actually what Dominic Pace, when he was on our show a couple weeks ago on our interview series, actually talked a lot about how that's an exciting element of being in the volume. Last one, The Mandalorian had a secret Mark Hamill cameo in its fifth episode. So, you know, the fifth episode is the one where they go to Tatooine. So That's cool. Mark Hamill on Tatooine is always awesome. And they're in the cantina, and there was the droid bartender, which is ironic.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Because we don't serve your kind here from A New Hope. It's actually, he played the voice of that droid in that.
Okay.
And it's the same droid that was like in charge of Jabba's.
The ability to Jabba's, speak does not make you
Jabba's,
intelligent.
Jabba's. In charge of Jabba's droid.
Droid torture chamber.
Yeah, that kind of thing. in that. So Jabba's skiff gets blown up. He has to find a new job. He becomes the bartender at the cantina. So that's kind of cool.
You got to step up.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to be pretty much it today.
So yeah, if you could just give us a rating and review on iTunes and Google Podcasts. Apparently Spotify doesn't do it, even though that's where I listen to all my podcasts. But if you could go over to Facebook as well, on our page, you can leave a review there as well. Just give us a rating.
Yeah, it helps people find the show and know that, you know, it's good family-friendly content. Emphasize the things you love about it. Emphasize positivity and emphasize family-friendly if you could. That would be great.
Yeah, and then don't forget to follow us on Facebook. I mean, you're probably already here.
If you're watching the show, if you're listening to us, then follow us on Facebook.
If you're listening, go and find us on Facebook at Tatooine Sons. But if you're watching, just like our page real quick. It's super, super quick. And then join our discussion group. It's Tatooine Sons discussion group. If you look it up on Facebook, just go ahead and join. It's a lot of fun. We're posting Star Wars stuff all the time, all sorts of discussions. You can post your stuff. It's a lot of fun. Just great, positive Star Wars content. And then also follow us on Instagram at Tatooine Sons as well. We're trying to get a little bit more in that. We post pictures every so often, more posts with that. And then Twitter, we're real active on Twitter at Tatooine Sons again, SONS. We're real active on Twitter, and then we're not on Snapchat because we don't know how that works.
I don't have any clue how to do Snapchat. So, all right, that's going to do it this week. Please check out our Voices from a Galaxy Far, Far Away interview series. We release 3 or 4 episodes a week on that. They usually drop at noon on Facebook, noon Eastern time, and as well as in your podcatcher. So, that's a lot of fun. Last week we had Dan Z, we've had Dominic Pace, we had Ross Sambridge, who played Snoke. We've had, this week I'm recording with Richard and Sarah over at Skywalking Through Neverland and some fun people as well. So we're excited about that. And then make sure you tune in next week to our main show, The Big Number 10. All right. Our final episode in this season. where we talk about Anakin Skywalker and his loyalty. And I'm going to make the argument that his loyalty is what turns into the dark side. And we'll talk about that next week. So, all right. I guess that's pretty much going to do it. So anything else you guys want to say?
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you always.
This party's over.
I like that Wookiee.
Don't get technical with me.
Joy, please.
Yep.